In this episode with Justin Davies, we talk all about business coaching, how to find the right one and why you need one, strategic planning, execution and advisory, so keeping yourself accountable and having someone else keep you accountable, facilitation and problem solving, because the situation that you're finding really challenging at the moment is likely one that someone's been in before. We also talk about marketing strategy development and execution, and of course, company growth. Tune in and let us know what you think. Thank you so much, Justin, for coming on the Perth Business Podcast.
Absolute pleasure. I'm really excited to be here.
And we gave you the choice today of a bev and you chose wine. So I've just picked up something from my Good Pear Days box, which is Pete's Pure Pinot Noir from Murray Darling.
Perfect.
Yeah. Love it's it. A good
or the P.
Wine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
PPP.
Yeah.
It's a youngie. It's 2021, but it's they are all based on like pure principles. So it's grapes grown under a large sky. I think most skies are large from experience.
Not the ones I've seen.
Yeah, not the ones you've seen? Not in Murray Darling?
No.
Okay. Good to know.
Not the grape skies there.
We'll touch on that in the tasting
episode. Fantastic. I grew up on a farm in Donnybrook, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we were lucky enough to have a small orchard. So like we didn't have to irrigate it. We didn't put chemicals on it, didn't do any of that kind of stuff.
Amazing.
So it was sort of organic.
Wow.
Like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of, great stuff like this. It's just got that natural flavour
yeah,
to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm
sure
it's going to be tasty. And, I mean, why would you want to have a bottle of wine and keep it for years? That sort of makes no
exactly.
sense.
Yeah.
Yep, not in the
Although
Australian
I'm doing
temperature.
That.
Yeah.
I'm currently doing that, but yeah. The recent 44-degree heat over Christmas, I was like, I should not be doing this. This is ruined. I may as well have drunk it when it was 20 degrees. God damn it.
Just dig a hole into your house and call it a cellar.
That's my goal in life, to have a cellar in my house. Yeah.
I remember my old man told me a story once about he was doing some work. He had a supplier, and the supplier, this is in the rag trade, had this bottle of wine that was like from the 1600s or something ridiculous, and it was just like almost priceless. And they'd had a couple of drinks, and he went, right, we're opening this.
Oh, my gosh.
Uh-oh.
Surely the
cork.
It was vinegar.
Yeah.
It was, no! So they like had a sip of it, and they kind of went, this is – probably, you know, $500 a teaspoon that we're tasting.
Oh, my goodness. And it would go really nice on dumplings, right?
Oh, really? Pretty much. Yeah, it was shocking.
That's so sad.
Anyway, there you go. So well, that's why I think wine's for drinking.
Yeah, wine is for having and enjoying. Yeah.
So right now,
luckily,
every day.
You've brought us some glasses so we don't have to drink out of the hen house cups. Not that we mind
or
the
our
mugs.
Hands.
Or our hands.
Fantastic. Well, cheers.
Cheers.
Trying to get Hannah out of the habit of drinking out of her hands.
Yeah,
glasses for grown-ups, Hannah.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just trying to keep it real. I feel like it's going to aerate a little bit, but I'm such a sucker for the first sip.
Yeah, that sounds like a good plan.
Oh, on the nose with a blueberry.
That's yummy.
That's nice.
Cool. Fantastic.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right.
Delicious.
Yeah, very good.
I wish we could see your face on the podcast. Yeah. Fantastic. Eyebrows just went to the roof. Not fantastic?
Well, look, fantastic enough.
Yeah.
You know, fantastic enough.
Oh, that's good.
Good.
We'll take it.
Yeah,
we'll
absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Perfect. Cool. Now that the drinks are in us.
Where do you want to start? Shall we
let's jump straight in.
How did you guys meet?
So I met Justin at the Perth Podcast Festival. And that was, was it August?
Oh, it's a little while away.
Yeah.
A while back, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was in August because that was my month of like, I was just busy every single day.
Yeah.
what's new? but we met at the Perth Podcast Festival and we were in the kitchen near the food. So that's the perfect place
to meet people.
Exactly the right place to be. Yeah,
exactly. It was the quiet corner too. I think, who else was there? The Obdo, Rob from Obdo was there, but we'll talk more about him in a different episode when we actually interview him as well. So that's where I do my best networking. Pro tip for podcasters, hang around the food table.
Yeah, good call. Smart thinking.
Yep. But I think what really got me was you were talking about, you straight up were saying, you know, I'll let you talk more about what you do, but business coaching. And I thought, okay, yep. What about you as an individual? Because I'm always drawn to the story of the person, not so much what you do, because anyone could say they're, you know, a digital marketer or a business coach or in HR. It's just, it depends what you bring to that. So I think our chat was really great and I'm really keen to explore it today.
Yeah, cool. Shall I just jump in?
Yeah, just go on.
Kicking stuff. Yeah. So for context, I grew up in family business and, you know, my folks had, of all things, my old man worked for the Donnybrook Bailing-Up Telephone Exchange. And prior to that, he'd actually put in, he led a project to put in all the telephone cables that went into parks so that the world could see the moon landing.
Wow.
He was like 22 or 23 when he did this, right?
He would have been buzzing to do that.
Quite an astonishing thing to be involved in. So he then ran the Donnybrook Bailing-Up Telephone Exchange, and he thought that Mum was a bit bored and she needed something to do, so they bought a shop.
Okay. That's a small commitment. Yeah, just minor.
That's what you do. So this shop had all sorts of stuff. It had, British paints when we still liked Rolf Harris.
Yep.
You know, when he was still an okay guy. And, you know, gas bottles and hardware and, you know, cassette tapes and all sorts of stuff. And it had a rack of dresses.
Okay.
And the dresses sold. And so then it became two racks, and then it became half the shop was dresses, and then all of it became a dress shop. And I can tell you that when you live in the country, the thing that you think you want is not that your folks own a dress shop.
Yep.
You want them to own a motorbike shop or a music shop or anything other than a dress shop. I didn't really realise the potential and the opportunity until about 3 years ago, but, you know, opportunity well and truly passed, you know, passed by then. So I had that experience of being inside a family business, and a lot of the quite innovative things that my father and mum were doing, and the different things that they brought to the partnership, and, you know, her creativity and style, and and, you know, his entrepreneurial flair, and the two of them together, you know, built really quite a successful business. You know, they had five shops. They had a bunch of regional distributors, and, you know, they were doing all sorts of, you know, interesting things. So my exposure to business started, really young and through that. And one of the things that, that really motivates me is I know what it's like to be inside a family unit when a business is going super well. Because what that means is that the relationship between, you know, the partners, husband and wife or whoever it is, that sort of family business, or if it's a business partners, if it's a different kind of business. Now, if that relationship's really strong, then what happens is that they invest in their staff and their teams, and they look after them really, really well. And if they then do that, then the customers love dealing with the business.
Yeah.
And then if they do that, then the suppliers love doing business with the business, and they get paid well, and they get paid on time and treated as partners and all that kind of good stuff. And then, again, if the business is doing well, then usually there's investment in the community.
Yeah.
So that's that kind of ongoing ripple effect is the thing that excites me, having lived it. Now, I also know what it's like when you get a load of financial pressure in that. So having gone from, you know, doing extraordinarily well, we talk about interest rates starting to have an impact now. So when I was, I don't know, 16, somewhere in about that time frame, interest rates were 21%.
Oh my goodness.
Wow. Right? So this is a, you know, if you, you think about, there's a lot of people that have got no clue what that feels like. And so it was just utter panic. So what banks were doing was they were trying to protect their interest by foreclosing on customers, which was actually just dumb thinking. And I've got no a conviction that the banks are any smarter all this time later, right?
Yeah, but maybe we'll get one on the podcast and debate that topic because, I would love to hear their
CFO of NAB.
Yeah, good. Good luck with that.
Be honest.
Yeah, so I think, I've seen both sides of that, and then and that's part of, I guess, what motivates me in terms of what I'm doing. So if I sort of go down sort of a little bit further down the path, my father after that, he ended up in real estate and he got involved in buying and selling businesses. And I started to get quite interested in this idea of what is a good business, what's a saleable business, what's not.
Yeah.
And we'd have conversations about different people he was talking to and was trying to help around where the business was at and fundamental things they were getting wrong, but things that they were doing really well and all of that kind of stuff. You know, they've got a really good business, but ...
Yeah, okay.
So that stuff I found interesting. The other thing that I found interesting from my childhood that influenced me a bit was we used to sit around and watch a show called The New Inventors.
The New Inventors.
No, that sort of sounds so old fashioned.
As opposed to the old inventors?
Well, it used to be called the inventors.
Then
they decided to, you know, go from black and white to colour, and then it became the new inventors, right?
Oh, so, right.
You know, exciting.
Yeah.
So,
now they're the old inventors.
Right. So, so that was fantastic because you'd get people on there who, you know, you'd have the farmer who had created something in the back shed and, you know, turned it into something and was trying to sell it, trying to work out how to commercialise it and all of this kind of stuff and focusing on the products and just looking at all these fantastic products and trying to get, right, well, which of these things going to work and which aren't and why aren't they and all of that kind of stuff. So that sort of innovation thing was sort of born in me early, but it's not something you sort of join the dots with until much later, typically.
Is what I found.
So.
Join the dots in the sense of like you only realise later on that you could do something with that skill that you had like developed, or
it's a little bit like have you ever come across somebody that seems to be quite successful in what they're doing, and then they sort of, you know, like in a quiet moment, going, oh, I don't really know what I'm going to do with my life.
Oh, yep.
Right? So.
Yeah, me.
I was like, I can relate to that.
Yeah, yeah. So there's lots of people who have been through that. So, yeah.
Friday night thoughts.
So what I think in part happens is that sometimes our subconscious is driving us in different directions. Mm. So we move towards things that we like and we do a bit more of that and they go, that feels right, I'm going to try and do more of that and move and see how that goes. And then we move away from things that we don't like. And so some of that we're not really that conscious about or prescriptive or driving in terms of our approach. We end up there.
Yeah.
You know, and so we end up there because we go, well, I like this or I don't like that. You know, and away you go.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So if I sort of go a little bit further on, I grew up in Donnybrook, which is just an awesome, awesome part of the world. Mm-hmm. And I did my first year in Edith Cowan University, the first year that it opened in Bunbury.
Wow.
Right?
Oh, wow.
They had a straight through library system then. Which basically meant they had no books. You could see straight through from one end of the library to the other,
that
right?
That sounds sophisticated.
There was,
I wonder if they have any books now.
Books. So,
low-cost option.
Yeah, so that was interesting. So I thought I was going to be an accountant.
Right.
Until I met my first year accounting lecturer.
Oh.
And
just a really strong opinion when you met them?
I went to my careers advisor and said, what have you got that is the opposite of accounting?
Right, because did you see them and you're like, That's not going to be me.
I do not want to be that.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy, I mean, he was trying to make us enthusiastic about his topic and he had a genuine passion for it. But he would say stuff like, I sit up on a Friday night and look at the balance sheets in annual reports and try to work out how they've done the numbers.
The horror.
It's my mother.
The horror. No, the horror, but not in that voice, surely. Your mum's
I love balance sheets.
debit, credit. So I went, that just doesn't.
No, thank you.
We hadn't invented then. So I went to the careers advisor and said, what do you got that's the opposite of accounting? He said marketing. I went, beauty, I'll do that.
Oh my goodness.
So marketing,
like surfing.
So marketing sort of seemed like a relatively kind of new discipline as a degree at that point. So we went through that. Everybody finished their degrees. Nobody had jobs. So it was just, you know, it was a fun.
Good time.
It was a fun.
What sort of year is this, by the way? I'm just curious about the.
Oh, 1942.
give away.
So late 80s, back when I had permed hair.
Love to see that. That's good.
Yeah, I've got a photo I can show you.
Absolutely.
As soon as this is done. You will laugh.
We'll put it as the image for the podcast. Just the perm.
Maybe not.
Lock and key that one.
You know, sometimes when your mouth just rambles after, you know, tasting some red, you go, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Anyway, so did the degree. Hunting for jobs then was hard. So I basically, you know, finished the degree and you need to get a job and we're just sort of sitting in the tail end of a bit of a recession at that point. So it wasn't easy. So I went and met with over 100 businesses before somebody said, yeah, I'll give you a go.
Wow!
Oh my goodness!
And
wow!
So, yeah. So I'd had a it was interesting interesting time. So I'd to you know go and hunt and get a
definitely
you know, proper yeah. a proper marketing gig. So, but you know, got there in the end, and you know, away you went. So
yeah, wow,
yeah. So
times must have been different as well, because did people believe in marketing, having marketing in their business?
What did it even look like?
Well, I remember I used to do some presentations for. There was a business, a growth centre part of Curtin, where different, same, a lot of the same team that was running Ignition, but it was actually a different part
right.
of the organisation that was looking after small and mid-sized businesses.
Yep.
Really great, great program. So I was doing some sessions around about sort of 2001,
right.
talking to people about, you know, what we used to call e-business. We used to put just an E on the front of everything back in like late 90s, yeah, like early 2000s. Everything had an E on the front of it, you know.
Email.
Email, e-business, e-marketing.
Direct marketing.
E-marketing.
E-sexual harassment. Yep. I'm just kidding.
Oh, my God.
just gags. Just
e-bullying.
I want to talk about your side, your little things that you do on the side for fun, because hint, hint, he's a little bit of a comedian. Yeah, we'll dive into that.
10th February, Fringe. Anyway, and Frio. So, so you know, again, you know, really interesting time. But I was doing presentations to small businesses, and I had people that were running engineering shops, and they go, "Why do I need email?" seriously,
yeah.
right? They're going, "Why do I need email?" Wasn't it like, "Why do I need a website?"
Yeah,
it's why do I need email?
Yeah.
Because there was, you know, you saw there was a lot of resistance to that back now. We think of the scourge that is email and how it destroys all of our lives now, but, you know, it was a relatively new thing.
Yeah.
Well, I remember, like a few years ago, working in an accountancy office, someone almost had a go at me because I was like, "You can't fax this through to me anymore." And he was like, "What do you mean? You can't, I can't use fax." And I was like, "We got rid of our fax machine." And he was like, "What do you, like, what? Do I have to use email now?" I was like, "Yes, you own a business. Please, please use your emails."
There's still faxes in medical.
Oh, it's
You know, it's just like, what is going on? You know, you've got some of the most incredible technology in that exists in that industry. Just incredible, and we're seeing lots of great innovation coming out of Western Australia, which is really exciting in that space. You know, it's incredible stuff.
But it ain't transferring files online.
Heavens no.
Yeah. Well, it's a security privacy question, I think. So
we're dealing with that at the moment at my full time workplace, and it is quite hard. It's quite hard to get that. So we're dealing at the moment with COVID, not being able to have external parties come into the office, or having to get an exemption where they have to show all the vaccination, and it starts getting personal. Like, give us your mum's maiden name. They're like, "I just want to take some data that I can do my job with," you know, because they're an external party for a reason. But we're really struggling to find, well, not struggling, but we're trying to find solutions that aren't already in place, which blows my mind.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, look at you know, there's an industry that needs help, is around, you know, I've got sitting in my password manager, I reckon about 800 logins. And so you're thinking you're getting, you know, two-factor authentication and all that stuff. You spend how much of your time are you spending logging into stuff?
Yeah. Right.
Signing up for stuff. And then people want to throw a new app on you, and it's just like, oh, my God.
Can't do this.
God, you know, I've just
setting up
enough.
The vaccination thing. You have to log into, like, four different things. And I was like,
you got to have three apps on your
phone.
I
don't remember my password.
I think I was actually blown away the other day. I was going to grab from my phone, but it's not here. The SafeWA app, and now there's like three other apps you have to have on your phone. And I didn't know about it because I don't watch TV or listen to radio.
Yeah.
Or I wasn't doing it that week. And everyone was like, "Have you not heard about this? Also, it's really shit and it doesn't work." I'm like, so do I get it or not? Like, do I need it legally or not?
Yeah, mine won't,
like,
link my record.
It's ridiculous. So I can't believe we're in this day and age where that's the trouble we're having.
Yeah.
Like, huh?
Yeah.
It's crazy. So, crazy. So you look at where you've got CIOs living in monocultures like Canberra, you know, that sounds like I don't like Canberra, but, you know.
Yeah, it just sounds a bit aggressive. Yeah. We are the Perth business podcast.
We love Perth. We're all about Perth.
We don't want to make enemies, yeah.
No. But I think anybody that's been to Canberra knows that it's a different kind of vibe there because it's such hugely government process. And so you've got a very large, standardized kind of computer, big vendor kind of attitude to a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And so instead of being like any commercial business would be, like you can imagine a good commercial business that isn't focused on an amazing app experience, putting up with an app that represents the biggest, you know, lot of transactions that anybody has with that organization across the country, with a consistent, you know, 2-3 star experience, and many people having terrible experience. And what we just talked, it's biggest belief, really, right? Yeah. It's just surprising, and it's just egos and vendors and all sorts of funny things. So
I swear, like our old Christian religion was onto something. They were like, just scratch some words in a stone, they'll get it. The people will be on it, and they did it, man, didn't they? Didn't they get it? Didn't they get it immediately?
Like 10. You just need 10. No more than 10.
Yeah, no more than 10. Two rocks max. I said two rocks max.
Two rocks. You know, maybe a couple of lashings, three. Yeah. But yeah, there we go.
There we go.
Is this something you talk about with your clients? Like
lashings?
You know, moving. Yeah, lashings. do you encourage it?
Well.
But do you encourage like moving forward, and when you see a business, I guess, structure that's completely out of date, is it a challenge to stir people away from that, or is that something that you kind of embrace, I guess, because it's their design of their business?
Look, it's a really good question, Hannah, in terms of where to start. So what I find, I chatted to a new business for the first time yesterday, and they're coming on board straight away, which is brilliant.
Awesome.
So, and their directors are East Coast in two cities, and one of them's actually going to be moving overseas. So, like, it's going to be interesting in terms of some of the challenges that they're going to have in running that.
Yeah.
But the point I was making to them, I think it's very important as a coach or a mentor or an advisor, you have to meet the business where it's at and the owners where they are at. And I think that some people come in with a very prescribed approach to what they're doing. They don't listen to where an owner is at. And one of the things I learned early is that owners, if you don't listen to them, they get short with you very quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
It's a give and take.
Right? Yeah. Most people are like that, but particularly owners, because they've got so many things that they're dealing with. And so you've got to add value really quick.
Yeah. Mm.
And you have to be meaningful. You have to show up every time in that way, and you've got to have real empathy for their position.
Yeah.
And I think also if you think about change success, you think like you're talking about change, right? So in change in large organizations is generally huge failure constantly because they don't have a good approach to change success. We don't have, you know, generalized agreement as to why we're doing this. We don't have the tools. We don't have the process. We don't have the structure. We don't have agreement, you know, all of those sorts of things. We don't have a good process for this. It's just like another gym program where you start it and 3 weeks later or 3 months later, it goes in the bin and you stop.
Yeah.
So change success is a real critical thing.
Right.
So when people need to change, they've got to see the want to change and they've got to see that that's the key priority. So what I've found is that a couple of times if I'm doing a brief presentation where I think the business is, if you put up a photo of Gordon Ramsay and then look at them directly and say, hey, can I be candid, you can say anything you like after that because they're kind of expecting that
you're an idiot sandwich.
I wasn't gonna say it.
I've never done that, but I think that what you're saying is, can I have permission to be really candid?
Basically,
you know,
can
I? Yeah. You know, I'm here to be direct with you.
Yeah.
Sometimes I had one guy that I worked with, and he's just fantastic, super super smart bloke, and he wanted to build an app in a particular space, and I actually found him a white label app that would do everything that he needed for like $30,000 a year.
Saved WA out.
How did you know? So something completely different to that. Anyway,
you're
so
hilarious.
So I found this app and I said, look, just do this, right?
Yeah.
Do this for 12 months. Learn about your market. Learn about your customers. Get some customers going. Then find out what you want to do differently and then do a deal with them or go and build your own thing.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of doing that, he spent about $250,000 building an app that didn't work.
Oh no. In WA with the WA resources.
Oh my God.
Oh, what a waste.
Yeah.
What a waste. A good learning opportunity, I suppose.
Lost. So he lost the $250,000.
Oh.
Lost his house. Lost his wife.
Oh my God.
Heavy. And then the white label app is sitting there going, oh bro, I could have.
So what's the learning out of that? Yeah. When somebody doesn't want to hear something, I'll tell them that little story and then I'll say, look, I don't ever want to be in a situation where...
I mean, that's the worst, but like...
It's shocking, yeah, right? So, yeah. And there was nothing unclear about what I was telling this guy, but I couldn't shake his point of view at the time.
Yeah. Right. He wanted to try it, yeah.
And one of the reasons was he had a somebody that was going to invest, but only would invest if they owned the app.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay? So, yeah. So I understand why he made the decision. Yeah. But what he didn't do is actually get the money locked in and a deal locked in. And so he didn't get the money. Mm-hmm. So he went and spent the money.
So it was just his money. Didn't get the investment. Yeah.
Bang. Yep. You know, yep. So. Yep.
Do not deal with your money, not in that situation.
Yeah. So, in that regard, you know, where I'm coming from is I really want to be candid with people because I'm absolutely coming at it from best intent.
Yeah.
But also, no business owner wants to be told that their baby is ugly.
Yeah, totally. No,
you
lie
passion,
through your damn teeth.
Yeah.
About that baby.
No, well, yeah, I know think, what you mean. Well, yeah. But the other thing is that, you know, for people that have done, you know, wonderful programs like Curtain Ignition or a Startup Weekend or, you know, go back to Rob Nathan doing Focus Upstart or, you know, Plus Eight or all of the great things that, you know, are happening.
Yeah.
Everybody that's in that, they get great advice, lots of great advice from different people and it all conflicts each other, right?
Right.
So then they've got to decide what of that advice they need to follow. And that's one of the ultimate challenges for an owner.
Yeah, I find that in my, like, because I'm quite an indecisive person, I tend to revert back to how my gut feels and what I'm getting in my gut feel because you do know what you want to do or which direction you want to take if the other option's taken away and you miss it or the option that you've taken suddenly feels wrong once you've taken it. Like, you do know, and it's about having the intuition before, but I really struggle when I have, so a good example is a GP. You've got three opinions. They've all got different backgrounds. They might be different genders, different ages. You know, the way they speak to you and, you know, their level of respect for you as a patient might be different. And they all have different opinions and you have to make the decision of which one to believe, trust and, you know, invest your money, your health in. Managers, bosses, people might tell you, like, I've been told before marketing's not for me. And as soon as she said that, because I had doubts, marketing's not for me. And as soon as she said that, I was like, nah, you're wrong. You're absolutely wrong. Get out of my face. And I was like, oh, thank God. Wow. Thank God that happened. Because I was, you know, before I was like, I don't know if it's for me. I'm really struggling. And as soon as she said it's marketing, in my head, I was like, nah, it's you. You're not the manager for me. I need to get out of this workplace. So that sort of thing is like where you listen to your business coach or your friends or your family or your partner or, you know, some random stranger, depending on what the opinion is that you need from them. But that, like, it is such a big thing, like trying to decide and listening to the different points of opinion when people are so convicted on their opinion, they're so convinced that they're right. And why wouldn't you be? If you're telling someone advice, you're not going to give them confusion or several different options or something you don't believe. Like, you'll tell them what you believe or have tried and therefore it's the right way. But that person then has this conundrum of, like, either it doesn't feel right or it doesn't work for me.
So let's talk about intuition and logic, right? Because I think, Taryn, that's a wonderful, like, what I love about that, right, is that there's those key moments where you're not sure, then you're very sure.
Mm. Yes.
Right? So how do you get there? I think I find that lots of owners, without some help, coach, mentor, friend, partner, whatever, will struggle to get through the decisions that they need to make because they don't know how to go through that process.
Right. Yeah.
So if you think about, you know, one of the things that I did over the last 12 months as I got myself accredited with a thing called Harrison Assessments. Why is that useful? It helps me understand people much more quickly and in much better depth and detail than I can without it. So I understand how they make decisions, how they operate, how they work with others, what they do differently under stress.
Sorry, is that like a theoretical stance or something?
So it's like if you would have heard of Disc or Myers-Briggs or those sorts of tools, it's different to that.
So it is
similar but different to that.
Okay.
Yeah, I particularly like it. I find it really valuable, so I just put all my clients through it because it helps me understand them more quickly. It helps them understand themselves more quickly. So let's talk about one part, which is decision-making.
Yeah.
So when you're making decision, some people lean on logic. So if you pick on those people with a slightly more accounting level,
say engineers,
brain engineers, exactly, lawyers, accountants, financial people, are typically very logic driven.
Yep.
And so what they will do, because they're strong in logic, they will sometimes lean on that logic when they actually need to lean on intuition. Right?
Yep.
And so when they need to be more intuitive, they're nervous about the decision, so they'll lean much more on logic. Even if the intuition is telling them it's wrong, they'll rely on the numbers.
Right.
Then you get some people who are very intuitive who just almost ignore the logic and just go with gut reaction.
Yep.
Right? And so I'm a little bit more in that camp than in the huge analysis camp.
Yeah.
Because I've over time you deal with a lot of businesses and a lot of different circumstances, you have a lot of experience, and your gut reaction is summoning that. Mm-hmm. That's, that's an NLP thing. It's what it's actually doing. It's sort of summoning that and giving you a way forward. So sometimes those people, when they're struggling with a decision, when they actually need to lean on logic, but they're very strong in, that gut intuition, will lean even more on the intuition and ignore the logic. So if you actually understand which way you are, then you go, right, I'm not sure about the decision. I'm leaning on my intuition. I actually know I now need to do a bit more on the logic side or get somebody that can help me or what have you, and then I can actually move forward with a safe, better decision.
Yeah, I was going to say, because your point there about leaning more towards one camp was that you don't sit fully in one or the other. There's no extreme position that you recommend or advise. And the fact that you said that you maybe need, if you can recognize that you lean either or let's be honest, one person, you can't say I'm equally balanced in absolutely everything.
No, you can't be.
Yeah. So having the business partner, the, management level or colleagues, employees that work around you and with you to balance that out, because I think, you can swing too hard one way or the other and you need someone who swings the opposite to you or sits in the middle camp. And kind of can give you that reasoning of, I hear you, I understand you, and I can see why you're thinking that, but have you considered this? And then to be able to be open-minded and say, okay, I'm being swayed by, the numbers and I haven't considered the emotion or the intuition side of it, and then, vice versa. So
that's a yin and yang of business partnerships, right? So if you've got, often you see business partners, so you see loads of tech businesses where you've got, the sort of the hacker and the hustler. Right?
Yeah.
So,
typical American, movie. Anyway,
but you've got that, I've seen and dealt with plenty of businesses here. We've got somebody that's capable of selling, ice to Eskimos. You've got ice, you've got Eskimos, you've got a sales target. What's the problem? We've got prefabricated ice. Why the hell would you want to cut this stuff yourself?
Mm.
We've got it in colours. We've got these double story igloos. I mean, why would you want to try and do that yourself? Just buy this ice from us. If you've got the right approach, you've got those people who can take a concept and connect it to a market super well. Mm. Behind them has to be the technical expert that makes it work. And often you'll find that those two in particular work super well in tech. You see those sorts of partnerships in large businesses where you've got, front-facing, finding the opportunities, leading the business, setting the direction, knowing where strategically to go and where to move. And then you've got somebody that's the enabler, that understands where everything's moving, understands the right tech, can help guide, we should get over there because that's where the tech's moving, not over here, those kinds of things. So those things can work really well hand in hand. Yeah.
I think a good, a way that I've experienced that is in simple terms, for businesses who want to advertise their product because, or they need, they're maybe not even advertise, they don't even recognize that. They're just my sales are always down in January through to March because of, you know, X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
What do I need to do? They speak to a digital agency, understand the digital agency, take their problems away, give it to the experts, the technical experts, those SEO, Google ads experts who can then say, like, this is all the information, and give it back to that person who can then translate it in layman's terms to say, you know, all these numbers mean that you should be doing investing this much, bidding on this, competing with these people, these businesses for this reason, and these are going to be the output. So I think, like, it can be really, really simple terms that you just need someone to communicate it to you well. So as a business owner, you're not always going to be the person that understands or thinks you need to upskill in SEO, Google Ads, Facebook marketing, sales. You know, if you're not one way inclined, there's going to be someone out there who is the expert, and you will find a middleman to translate it, you know, for you.
One of the examples that makes me think of is quite a few years ago when I was working with RAC.
Oh yeah,
right. So we were one of the ad agencies that was working with RAC. We were looking after the insurance business, and I was doing a lot of the direct marketing work across the group and that kind of good stuff. And we had this fantastic researcher based out of Melbourne who would come over and decipher what the TV tracking research was telling us. And he was able to take those numbers and go, let me tell you what this actually means in a way that was practical and actionable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you've got to have data plus insights. You know, you need both. You absolutely need both.
Yeah.
So, well, here's, you know, owners, here's what I think is one of the challenges with owners. They've got so much stuff going on in their heads.
Oh, yeah.
Right? So they're horribly digitally distracted. And they've got so many things to think about. So when you pull together a one-page plan for them and work out the key things that they're going to be working on, all of a sudden there's a sense of calm or more calm, less stress. And so you then get focus, and then you get energy in a direction. As a result of getting energy in the direction, you get progress.
Mm-hmm.
And that for me is, you know, really exciting when you see those businesses kicking, you know, kicking goals. It's terrific.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. What's been the biggest challenge for you that you've sort of experienced in your coaching journey that most business owners face?
Oh, good question. I can think of lots of fun stuff that I dealt with. I'll see if I can pick a couple little stories. So before I started my own business, I was running a software development business inside an ASX listed company, so I had a team of about 30 people. Okay. My background wasn't really IT originally. I'd come from the advertising industry and played it a lot in digital really early, but I was a good talker and understood concepts really well. That was one of the things that the advertising and marketing taught me is how do you express a concept quick, which becomes incredibly
You yell really loud.
Anya, this is why you're not in marketing. What's it? The only thing I can think of is carpet sale.
Rugs a Million.
That's it. Thank you. Rugs a Million.
We wanna bring back the Starburst. That was the Starburst. Got to go retro. Fantastic. So, I'd just been promoted to regional director from head of sales, and we had one of our clients threaten to sue us.
Mm.
Right. So this is like day two. Right, so I'm going, oh God, how good are you? You need to go and sort this out. It was one of those interesting things where you're going in and you're thinking, right, we've got a proper disaster here that could substantially derail
trouble.
Substantially derail the business. So what do we do? So it was one of those cases where, you know, how you're talking about intuition that sort of tapped in, and I went, I think I need to use Covey's, you know, listen in order to be heard. So from Seven Habits.
Okay.
And so I went in and I sat down with the person and said, look, here's what we'll do. I'm going to let you talk until you're completely done.
It's like therapy.
Completely done. And then when you're completely done, I'll talk and you can listen to me.
Yeah.
Right? And then when I'm completely done, hopefully we'll have sorted it out.
Yeah, right? Get the cards on the table.
And so what she said is, she went, oh, right, okay, well, our position is this and I reckon your position is that and I reckon we could meet here. Mm-hmm. And that would work for both of us. All right, so this is the face that you can't see of the podcast, which is how did that work so well? How did that work so well? Yeah. I mean, it was literally, it was like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
Huge problem solved.
Yeah.
And so it was that, it was one of those, it was one of those great kind of, interesting early lessons, I think, that was good.
I reckon lawyers would be really good at that.
I was going to say, I was thinking
maybe the suits.
Lawyers are interesting.
Or dismantling of their opponent.
Well, I think I think of a colleague of mine that I've known for a long time, and what I like about him is he's a business person first, mm-hmm. and who happens to be a lawyer.
Yep.
That happens to be the toolkit that he brings to the table, mm-hmm. but he's very commercially minded.
Right.
I think that's when you're working with advisors, that's the sort of people that you really want. They, you know, happen to be a very commercially minded person who happens to be an accountant or happens to be a lawyer
or
whatever that might be. You know, so I think that's useful. You know, I think that really helps.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry to cut you off there. Do you have any other examples of any challenges? So I think, you just spoke about the, like, mitigating the issue of just going around in circles and circles by getting the cards out on the table between the two parties, whether it's a business owner maybe taking that practice home and doing it with their business partner if they've got one, doing it with someone who's just a really, what's the word, objective listener. Is there any other challenge that you think stands out?
Yeah, sales.
Sales, yeah.
Right. Oh, so yeah. Connecting stuff to a market. I often find that used to be the classic book that everybody talked about was the E-Myth, the idea that, you know, you'd have a technician, somebody that's got a technical capability starts a business. So it could be an accountant, or it could be a digital marketer, or it could be a software developer or an engineer or whatever it is. You've got somebody that's technical starts a business. And what's the problem with those people? The wonderful thing is that they come up with incredible solutions. What's the problem with them? They just want to bang on about the solution. And so they're actually not very good at selling. They don't intuitively know how to handle the process, and they get stuck. And often I'm finding that nearly everybody I work with has terrible sales process or no process at all. You know, slow follow up, just do not know how to navigate that process of selling anything. They're just so utterly lost through that. And so it is one of the areas which I find with customers I'm talking to really early is like, show me your sales process. What does that look like? How does it work? Where's it working? What sort of add-ons have you got in there? What do your customers look like? How are you looking after them? What sorts of other services have you got?
Yeah.
You know, what sort of customers do you really want as opposed to the ones you've actually got? You know, all of those kinds of interesting questions. I had a client who I was speaking to, and I said, how are you really? And he said, I'm not really good. My wife's about to give birth to our first child in 6 weeks. Mm-hmm. She's then going to stop working. We've got a couple of full-time staff, and I've got no work coming in. I said, right, how many weeks cash have you got? 6.
Oh my God.
Right. So, like, this is.
We talked about this in a previous podcast with, I think it was your mum.
It was my mum.
Yeah.
The accountant.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So, it's like it's terror.
Mm.
And the terror is polarizing, absolutely polarizing. So, you've got that deer in the headlights scenario. So, I said, right, well, you're going to have to get out and get selling now.
Mm.
Right. And I could see that the willingness to pick up the phone and do what was necessary wasn't there.
Right.
Because just there was a terror. Like the phone becomes 1,000 kilos of weight. Yeah. You can't lift it.
You just stop.
Yeah. Just stop.
Yeah.
And so I just kept calling him, going, right, tell me how many calls you've done today. Like, what have you done? Who have you spoken to? How did that go?
So can we take a step back? What is your advice? What makes a good salesperson? Because I have seen a bajillion Gary V's out there who think that the best thing to do is get in everyone's face. And in some respects, it might be, especially in this age, I feel like I'm a million years old. Best in this day and age. Get your face out there on TikTok, guys. No, but I feel like that's not the solution to everything. I'm aware of it. But I am a digital marketing, but I digress.
What makes 14-year-old customers?
In my opinion, what makes a good salesperson is someone who can connect on a very like genuine, authentic level. So for me personally, if I'm being sold anything, I'm an absolute sucker, I used to be, for those guys in the shops who used to be like, oh, you're a woman with skin. Do you want to know about my skincare thing? And I'm like, oh, poor thing. She's been staying there for hours. Like, yeah, I'll humor her for a bit. In the end, I end up paying like $130 for the shit that I didn't need. Right. And I walk away and I go, fuck, she was a good salesperson. You are weak. But I hated it afterwards. I was weak as piss. Now I just put my eyes down and walk really fast. My point being that these days, in the Gary V age of have content constantly spouting out about how sure and confident you are and how good your method is and I can see your eyes doing the crossy thing. The best salesperson is one that is humble. You almost want to help them because of how they've come across and been so genuine and their offering is so authentic, you couldn't say no. So what makes a good salesperson?
It's all of that. I think the I like you, I can't stand the Gary Fee kind of I can't
shove it down your throat method.
It doesn't work in our culture.
Mm.
It is culturally wrong for Australia. You can't take that to the UK. You might be able to do that in the US, mm-hmm. but fundamentally there's a couple of things that are absolutely critical. One's authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not authentic, you know, then you don't have a chance. One of the other things that's really interesting, I was talking to a friend of mine about this recently, a lot of people don't spend their time present. And what I mean by that is that they spend 45% of the time thinking about things that have happened that they can't do anything about, but they're worrying about the ramifications of that. I did something that wasn't quite good enough or what have you. And they're mentally in the past, or they're worried about something in the future, again, that they can't do anything about. And they're not there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And two different types of anxiety, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. And a perfect client for me is somebody when you're looking at them and you're talking to them, they're not there. They're looking up to the left and they're thinking about all the stuff that they need to do.
Yeah.
You know, because they're not there. The best salespeople are utterly there.
Mm.
You know, they're utterly there with you. And they're listening and they're asking good questions,
yep.
and doing at most like 10% of the talking.
Yeah,
you look at a lot of I remember talking to a really good friend of mine, and you know, his business is absolutely going gangbusters now. He's doing super well, and we're talking about the spin selling method,
mm-hmm.
as a method for engaging in that way. And he goes, Justin, you'd be proud of me. I've spent the whole time asking all these good problem implication questions and writing notes down and all of that kind of stuff. I went, no, you weren't. You asked some basic stuff that was useful for you and not useful for the client.
Mm.
So the issue that you've then got is if you ask good questions that solve problems for clients or poke to problems for clients, then the thing that they do is they go, oh, that's a really good question. Mm. So they tell you it's a good question. That's nice.
Yeah.
But then you start to uncover the needs that they need to have solved so that they can head in the right direction. Too many people, and I've been guilty, I've made all of these mistakes. I have made all of these mistakes and more. So back in 2000, I started an e-business consultancy.
Stop it.
Back in the E's.
Still using a fax machine though.
No. Yeah, we tried to be an innovator and get rid of the fax. Yeah. We actually never owned a fax, so that was good. So so what I was doing is I was doing a lot of presentations. I think in one day, I think I delivered 7 or 8 presentations.
Wow.
From like 7 in the morning till 8 that night. Wow. I was shattered by the time I finished because I'd been done a whole week of that. So I was doing lots of presentations.
Wow.
And I had the whole, you know, flash spinning, bring them in, you know, take them out, get them excited, get them engaged. I had all of that down.
Mm-hmm.
Selling nothing.
Nice.
I had lots of people saying to me, oh, wow, like you're so far in front of the market. This is exciting stuff. This was, you know, have you ever seen Netscape? You know, this is in the age of Netscape and, you know, Internet Explorer 2,
yeah.
Right? The stuff that these guys was doing was like just so cutting edge brilliant that it was miles in front of the market.
Refreshing the page.
You know, completely different stuff. I mean, it took forever to load because all the servers were in the UK, but, you know, don't worry about that. So I was meeting with people, but I was going, that stuff looks fantastic. Like, you guys are so front of the market. No business.
So, like, fantastic, but not for me. I'm not there yet.
Well, like, it's got nothing to do with my – it's got nothing to do with the problem I got on my to-do list.
Yeah.
So when I spun that around 180 degrees and went, so how's business? What a great question that is. So how's business?
Yeah.
Or even better, how's things?
Yeah.
So that's the first question I always sit down when I'm talking to someone and go, how's things? Because it allows them to get whatever it is. Remember, we were talking about, you know, they're 45% in the past or they're 45% in the future. It allows them to get present. So they go, oh, I'm really worried about this thing that my daughter's doing. She's joining a new school or she's doing whatever. I'm worried about that and, you know, this is what I'm worried about. And you listen and they go, right, okay, I'm going to put that down. I'm ready for you now. And so it allows them to get present. So how's things? So then you can go into, well, how's business? Right? And so then they can start to loosen up a little bit about that. And then the right method, if you're problem solving, is to go and try and hunt for the problems that they have that you can solve and start to explore those and the implications of those those problems so that you can then come up with, you know, with solutions. But you've got to – it's asking lots of questions and doing 10, 20% of the talking.
Yeah.
You know? Because the questions persuade.
You know? Oh, yeah. Open-ended questions always, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like you've almost like anything, you've got to convince the person that it was their idea or they came to the solution themselves. And it's there. Like, you're the business coach. They're running a business. You're guiding them. You're not teaching them how to do it. Otherwise, you'd be running the business. So it's like, yeah, it's more of like, well, why is this a problem? Okay, what are your three goals to, like, what are three ways that you can solve it? What are you going to start with? What are the... What are your goals? How are you going to start doing it incrementally as opposed to, like, looking at this massive problem the size of Mount Everest and being like...
You're sort of facilitating the path as opposed to going, here's the answer. That's the difference between a coach and an advisor or a facilitator and an advisor.
Yeah.
You know, the advisor would go, here's the problem, here's how you solve it.
Yeah.
And the Good world, the the world is littered with, you know, lots of great reports from smart companies that aren't implemented. You know, that's no good. That doesn't help anybody. You've got to work out, how do you untap that wellspring of motivation and direction that provides great energy and away you go. And then you get, you know, successful businesses and happy owners and all sorts of, you know, all sorts of wonderful things out of that.
Yeah. I feel like we landed on a really good note there. Because I said we would. What's your – you have a couple of side hobbies and I feel like this can lead into – I'm going to force it into the little topic of how do you – stay on your business, your career track, but allow time for yourself to have fun on the side. So can you tell us a little bit about what you do on the side and how it helps you stay on track?
Okay. Everybody that you talk to that's in business goes, you've got to have some, you know, brain space. So whether it's yoga or meditation or whatever it is that works for you, then, you know, you've got to do it. For me, it's golf. Well, most of the time it's golf. Sometimes golf frustrates me, but most of the time for me, because I grew up in the bush, you know, being near trees and that kind of stuff, I don't really want to be trees. I prefer to be on the fairway, to be honest, but I find golf's relaxing. You know, you're amongst good people and it's, you know, it's a great thing to
Play
be doing.
Play a goal, you know.
Yeah, so and you just go, I don't need to worry about anything. All I've got to do is take this tiny ball and stick it in a hole in 450 metres away and hopefully less than 5 shots.
Yeah.
Or, you know, hopefully less than 10
Very
shots,
clear.
Depending on
how
you are. Right? So, so it's simple. So I love doing that. I think, you know, exercise is really good and meditation, that kind of stuff is really good. I think then having some hobbies that stretch you in different directions is is good. So I've always played music, but I had a big kind of gap while my kids were growing up, and then really seriously got back into that. So I did my first full solo gig about a week or so ago, which was really, really good fun. And I've played in bands and that kind of stuff before. Awesome. So look up
the guitar.
Blockchain Blues Band on Facebook. You'll
Blockchain
find
Blockchain Blues. That's amazing.
Yeah,
right.
So you know, a
something
blues.
Many of us are feeling lately.
Yeah. Well, you know, all technology is better with blockchain, and so a blues band has got to be better with blockchain too, right? So, that's good fun. Some wonderful people in that band. So you know, that's a bit of fun. And the other thing I thought I'd try, because I've wanted to my entire life, was to do stand up comedy.
Yeah. Wow, that's a huge leap.
It's a bit different.
Bravery, yes.
Well, people say you're incredibly brave, but isn't anybody brave that gets up and, I mean, like, you guys are brave getting up and going, I'm going to do a podcast and let's listen to the world hear that and see how that goes.
I was brave and I was like, honey, you're coming with me.
That's because I was really funny.
Yeah, there we go. So everybody worries about getting heckled and all that kind of stuff, but it is.
Get him off the stage.
Boo. Yeah. How about you tell a joke?
Oh, burn, cigarette.
when does the funny start? So, having a process around that, again, it's all about stretch. So what's interesting about that is that it gives you, in a couple of different ways, different tools in the tool set that you can use when you're facilitating. So it actually, it just helps you in different ways, and it also helps you stretch and relax in sort of different fun ways too. Yeah. So that's been lots of fun. I don't know what I'm going to do next after this, just more of it.
Stay tuned, I guess.
Yeah, so, but those are the things that I really, really like, and I'm as, fired up and as excited about music as I've ever been, and I'm excited about the, opportunity for comedy. I mean, as we were saying, when I was, Hannah and Taryn, when I first came in tonight, I've done rehearsals in this very studio about 30 years ago. It was one of my early bands.
Sorry, how many years ago?
Three, would you believe three?
Each to their own, man. Yeah.
He's a spring chicken, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I look better in the photos after the Photoshop's done.
Airbrush that,
brush that right out.
Oh, lovely.
That's what we need is actually, if you can have walking, talking Photoshop that somebody could edit you as you're walking down the street, wouldn't that be brilliant?
Give you back
that
your
would
perm.
Be damaging. Yikes.
Yikes.
Mentally
tell us how you really
it.
Feel, Tara.
I haven't seen the photo yet. I'm just may stand.
Oh, no, that'll be pretty much the response I expect.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
It's been awesome to be a part of this. I got loads of sort of good videos and that kind of stuff on the website for business owners to go and have a look at.
What's the website?
Imagination.com.au.
Awesome.
So just look up the free resources on the right-hand side at the top. There's great diagnostics to help people. I think there's a dozen there that you can dive into parts of your business and loads of videos and free tips and all that kind of stuff. And I always love catching up with owners and sitting down over a coffee and see if I can help them. So
great, fun
stuff.
Yeah, can confirm a good coffee/wine buddy. Beer buddy. I think we caught up for beer, wasn't it? Beer.
Beer's always good too.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic.
Lovely. Thank you.
Thanks so much for the opportunity to get together and meet with you. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to that episode, guys. Check back here weekly as we post every Monday morning to share the best stories from Perth's entrepreneurs. Make sure you like, review and subscribe on the channel that you listen to this on and wherever you see us on Facebook, LinkedIn and Instagram.